Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. This is our fifth lecture, and the series was started around a month and a half ago, and we titled it Trying to Understand Religion in the Contemporary World. There has been a slow progress in how we understand from the Quranic perspective and from our own capability to reason. The process of our creation, aided by the verses of the Quran, and through it, the purpose for which we were created. In the last lecture, I tried to emphasize the difference between us being animals on the one side and performing a lot of functions as animals do, including the most emotional bonding of them, the love of the mother for the child. This, I said, was placed totally in the domain of us being animals. And as a result of that, the function of the soul is distinct. So what we do as parents, what we do as a family, all belong to the domain of the animal in man. The soul, which is what defines us and makes us different from all that exists by an infinite degree, is something different. I use the verses of the Quran here. The very famous word, مَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لَيَعْبُدُونَ. I have not created the jinn and the humans except that they may worship me. This clearly defines that the soul has been created for only the worship of God. From this point, I will start today's lecture. Regarding the animal basis of mankind, we have a very clear verse in the Quran. Surah An'am, the sixth surah, verse 38. وَمَا مِنْ دَابَّةٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلَا طَائِرٍ يَطِيرُ بِجِنَاحَيْهِ إِلَّا أُمَامٌ أَمْثَالُكُمْ وَمَا فَرَّطْنَا فِي الْكِتَابِ مِنْ شَيْءٍ ثُمَّ إِلَى رَبِّهِمْ يُحْشَرُونَ. The translation: there is no animal on land, nor a bird that flies with its wings, but they are communities like yourselves. But they are communities like yourselves. We have not omitted anything from the book. Then they will be mustered toward their Lord. This clearly places us, along with animals and birds, in the domain of being common with them in a lot of our activities, which we should not mistake as that. I had not mentioned this word in the last lecture. It only emphasizes what I had explained then. We need to understand this very fundamental aspect of our being animals with an infinite difference. The animal function being performed as a natural product of our being animals, hormones playing their roles, every other aspect of our mind and body having its own way of developing and being used, the way animals use it for their own purpose to survive, to make their life as happy as possible, eating the best fruit, trying to be controlling a group amongst themselves, trying to be the head of a herd and fighting for that. We have all that in common. All that in common. What makes us different is that soul which had been created for worship. Since that soul had been created for worship, it doesn't mean that we will not use our infinite ability bestowed to us by our soul in any other manner. It doesn't mean that considering the soul has been created for worship of God alone, we will not be able to use it for any other purpose. This is the biggest problem of ours. Had we been animals like all other animals, we wouldn't have the power to do as much good or as much bad things which we are doing and are capable of. The soul propels us in the right direction when it's in a state of worship, and it doesn't propel us in the right direction when it is not in the state of worship. So the prophets and the imams did what they did in this world in a state of worship. The Quran also hints at this. Fi salatihim da'imun, says the Quran. They are always in a state of worship. Now that is not possible. This is being told about the mu'mineen. The verse is specific about the mu'mineen. Not all of them. It is the quality of a mu'min at a particular level to one. Ala salatihim yuhafizun. That is again another verse of the Quran. They safeguard their prayer. That is, when you add these two together, one, safeguarding their prayer, and the other are in a constant state of prayer, continuous state of prayer. This means that they don't want to come out of the state of worship and prayer. And in that state, they are guided towards God and do God's will, do God's doing as representatives and vicegerents and vicegerents, khulafa of God on earth. So the biggest problem where the Quran says, we gave them the eyes, the ears, and the ability to ponder and think, right? And then they didn't use it. They didn't use it. It is the eyes of man. It's the eyes of the human being. It's the ears of man. It's the ear of the human being. It's the heart of the man. It's the heart of the human being which is capable of seeing things beyond the ordinary and deriving results from it, lessons from it beyond the ordinary. The effort of the animal is to safeguard itself and its progeny, its children. Creativity is not the domain of animals. Even the wonderful nests which are made by the weaving birds are basically functional, though they look beautiful to us. And that was being done by them millions and millions of years ago. What they are capable of, they were capable of then, and they are capable of now. creativity and capability to transmit that creativity to the next generation and create a civilization out of it is the domain of the soul. And this soul, if it is guarded through prayer, if it is properly guarded through prayer, worship, it takes the right path and moves in that direction where it is supposed to go. Therefore, as I said, the Quran says, they had all these three abilities: to see, to think, to hear, but they didn't use it. And as a result, they became kal an'am balhum azal, like cattle or even worse. Like cattle or even worse. How worse? God wouldn't like to tell it in the Quran. He would like us to understand when he says worse than cattle, what we are becoming. Infinitely superior to anything living in the animal kingdom. And coming down below cattle would be an infinite drop from the Ala Illiyin to the Asfala Safilin. Again, two words used by the Quran, two phrases used by the Quran. We can take them to the highest of the high or bring them to the lowest of the low. We can bring them to the high. The process of going to the high and the beyond is through being able to lift the veils of the unseen, which I spoke of in the last lecture. Moving ahead and lifting veils after veil, and each veil lifting brings us face to face with God. Brings us face to face with God. We say Subhanallah. Subhanallah, Subhanallah, the veil one after another gets lifted and it goes on and on. A lot of veils have been lifted by the Quran itself, just as a guide to us in the path of finding more of them. I just mentioned how God wants us to see. In the last lecture, I didn't recite this ayat, recited this ayat in the question and answer, which I want to make a part of the lecture today. أَفَلَا يَنْزُرُونَ إِلَى الْإِبِلِ كَيْفَ خُلِقَتْ وَإِلَى السَّمَاءِ كَيْفَ رُفِعَتْ وَإِلَى الْجِبَالِ كَيْفَ نُصِبَتْ وَإِلَى الْأَرْضِ كَيْفَ سُطِحَتْ. Surah Ghashiyah, 88th Surah, verses 17 to 20th. Do they not observe the camel, how she has been created? And the sky, how it has been raised, and the mountains, how they have been set, and the earth, how it has been surfaced and spread. These are the basic verses of the Quran during the Makki period, during the initial period, where the physical structure of the camel is being told to be observed. As I told earlier, it was not being pointed out to how to milk the camel, how to graze the camel. No, it was khilqat of the camel. Kaifa khuliqat, how it has been created. Look at the intricacies. You see it, how it goes in the desert, unhindered by the sandstorms, which are like storms in the sea, burying people in the dust. It becomes a refuge for the rider. The last resort when all water is finished to provide water to the rider by what it stores in itself. God wants us to look beyond what has been visible, and then it takes you further and further and further and further. As we go, I had already spoken about the clouds, how the mountains move like clouds, how the gravity has been spoken of in the Quran, the pillars you can't see. These two verses I have already mentioned. There is another verse which is worth mentioning again. Yeah. This is about the mountains. We have set firm mountains in the earth, lest it should shake with them. And we have made broad ways in them so that they may be guided. So the role of the mountains has been defined. That has again been proved to us now in this present times, how the mountains are able to see to it that the stability of the earth is maintained. I think I missed one of the verses here. I should be able to get that. I'll mention the other one which I would like to see. Yeah, here it is. And it says in the Quran again, وَأَنزَلْنَا الْحَدِيدِ, and we sent down iron. This again is a verse which says أَنزَلْنَا. It's been proved now that iron has come to the earth from the meteorites when it was being fired with meteorites before all life came in this world. It's been proved that all heavy metals are formed in the core of stars, and from there they move out. Even gold, which we have here, is the result of it being created in the core of stars. When you speak of stars, it's the core of the sun. That would be the nearest to us. So all this, and God says, Anzalna. It says, Anzalna al-Kitaba, in the same verse, verse 25 of Suratul Hadid, and then says, Anzalna al-Hadid. So the Kitab came from above, that is not a part of this earth, and again, we have sent down Hadid. This is what we have come to know now. Similarly, the verse which says we have created all living things out of water, again proves, which came when we were able to use microscopes and see the cytoplasm, which is 80% water, and that is what is the basic living matter of the cell, which keeps the cells alive, like the blood of our bodies. This is what God is speaking on the physical front, where you would be wanting to learn more and more from Him. You have the ability to understand. This is the ghaib I am pointing to you towards. And that is the result why the Muslims were able to be leaders in science. How can a book coming from God make a community which had no literature before it in any sense, apart from poetry of the worst kind? Poetry of the worst kind, and whose script had just developed during the childhood of the Prophet, hardly not even a generation old. How can a book coming there to a Prophet who was unlettered, though pure and pristine, how did it all happen? And if we again go back to the same process, considering that we have left the bus of modern development, Muslims have missed the bus of modern development. If they go back again to the same source and get inspired and move in that direction, where will it take it, provided they protect themselves through constant prayer, as mentioned in the Quran, safeguarding their prayer and staying in that state continually? How will it change the world for good from the world of today, which as a result, which I mentioned in the earlier part of this lecture, we have a soul, if not controlled by God, would create havoc. And it is creating havoc. In personal lives, at the level of the family, at the level of the society, and at the level of the world at large. Are we not seeing it? And what is amiss? The only thing amiss is God and godliness. The souls, primary function, soul function for it which it has been designed, is being disregarded by us. Though we have the ability to find it out, whatever verse comes in the Quran is basically a guidance to the muttaqeen. We have discussed this in the earlier lectures. Hudalil muttaqeen. So whatever is being told, if it's something is been told that life is there, and water is the source of life, and we created everything from water, is being a guidance to us. We have sent down hadith, is again a guidance to us. We need to work up from where we are towards these higher realities of gravity, of the movement of the earth, rotation and revolution. One more thing which the Quran very obviously says, speaks of the orbit of the sun along with the moon. This is again a very latest 20th century thing where it was accepted as a solar system. The earth rotates on its axis and revolves around the sun. It has an orbit in which it moves. The orbit of the sun was not spoken about. This is again a new development. The sun again moves around the center of the galaxy and it has an orbit. This has come out much, much, much later during last century, where the movement of the sun was also understood and that it had an orbit. Otherwise it was considered to be stationary and the earth was supposed to move around with an orbit. The Quran specifically mentions this. Had it been just spoken on the basis of a chance, had Quran spoken on the basis of chance, there would be so many mistakes, because you can mistake more if you are just guessing than if you are speaking on the basis of knowledge. Guesswork can work for once, for twice or thrice. It can't work 100 times. The Quran continually puts this on and on and on to us and says, this is the way to move. If you want to move, I am going to take you and hold your hand and then see to it that you are raised to that level for which you were created. As Hazrat Ali says, oh man, you have been created for nothing less than the heaven. You have been created for nothing less than a heaven. Don't sell your soul for anything less than that. That is what our Mawla says. Don't sell your soul for anything below that. That is how it should be. That is how it should be understood. We need to understand the flow of creation. We need to understand the flow of creation. When we see what we are using, iron came to the earth before we came in. Gold came to the earth before we came in. All the elements in the earth came before we came in. Life came to earth much before we came in. Everything comes on earth before we come in. And then we come in. And God says in the Quran, خَلَقَ لَكُمْ مَا فِي الْأَرْضِ جَمِيعًا. We have created for you whatever is in this world. So we came at the end. The processes are very, very clear. The child is born and before that the milk is available for the child. Everything, conception takes place, but for that the body is already ready to feed the child through a process. Each process requires a billion reactions in a fraction of a second to sustain itself. Otherwise it goes awry. Everything happening in perfection beyond any kind of imagination. And we are capable to understand it in some detail. I am again mentioning this. In some detail. And that is enough. مَا أُوتِيتُم مِّنَ الْإِلْمِ إِلَّا قَلِيلًا. We have not given you knowledge except little, says the Quran. Why does it say that? It says that because for you to worship me, it doesn't require for you to know everything in this world about what it is in its reality. You can have functional knowledge of things for you to understand that there is something beyond this which has the real knowledge. So real knowledge is not required for us. We require functional knowledge and we have been created for that functional knowledge. You will be surprised. You will be surprised that even the idea of motion, we don't understand it wholly, though we have the laws of motions of Newton. So it's shelved. The real understanding of motion is shelved. The functional understanding is taken and the laws made. You will be surprised. We don't know much about quantum physics, but functionally we have been able to use it for so many things. The MRIs which we have here are a result of understanding. The transistors, the electronics which we have, all are a result of our understanding of quantum physics, but our understanding is functional in nature. It is too deep to understand its reality in a complete sense. It only wows you how great it is. I am not the one who is saying it. Niels Bohr, who is considered to be the father of quantum physics, right, the Copenhagen school, he says, those who are not shocked when they first come across quantum theory, those who are not shocked when they first come across quantum theory cannot possibly have understood it. You are shocked and then you understand. What do you understand? When in a state of shock, you can understand very little. Unless you get that shock that it is too great, you are not given that too little. Unless you are not awed by what it is, how too great it is, you are not bestowed how you need to understand it in that too little. Had we been able to master it completely, this world wouldn't have existed. Man would have destroyed himself completely. God gives enough for him to know to worship him, not to rule the planet. It is the mistake of man. With the knowledge he has, he wants to rule the planet. Instead of ruling it, he is ruining it. Am I right or wrong? Instead of ruling it, so you have been given knowledge to serve here as my representatives. You have not created anything. I have created you. You understand that I have created you and I am the merciful God, the beneficent and the merciful, and you become my representatives on earth, the Khulafa, the vice regents, and then keep operating whatever knowledge you require for performing that function. I am ready to give you. Get the idea of ruling it. You will only use that little knowledge you have to destroy, and in the final process, had we not controlled events with our will, you would have destroyed this world many times over, because your creativity is totally dependent on us, and your dependence on us is so complete that if you are not connected, you cannot deliver. The connection is through prayer, and only those will deliver who are connected through prayer with me, and then come to the world and work in it as the prophets and the imams did. Look at those who were against them. What did they create? Just look at the mushrikeen of Makkah. The kafirin who opposed the prophet in Makkah. What were they doing? What have they created? Nothing. Look at every place in this world where there has been kufr, there has been no great development. And if it has been there, it has been for destruction. Uncontrolled destruction. Today what is happening? Those who are having technology are trying to get everything out of the world because they have a superior technology. And laws are being made for them to benefit. And as we see during the COVID, the billionaires have benefited from the tragedy that has befallen mankind during the last year. Their richness, their wealth has increased and has given them more power to further control the destiny of mankind. Greed has become the basis of controlling other humans. And technology has become the maid servant for doing so. What should have really happened? The opposite of it. Higher technology for all, that means no hunger. That means every sick patient would be treated. Every orphan would be cared for. Every destitute would be sheltered. That would have happened. Instead, what is happening? Arms race. Among third world countries, who can ill afford to buy arms at the rate at which they are being sold? Adding to the misery of the poor of the nation and giving the rulers of the nation the idea of being superior to another nation. Superiority could have been in the serving of the people. Instead of it, the wealth of the people is being shifted into unnecessary expenditure for wars, and what had to go to the poor person is becoming the income of the rich suppliers of these arms. Israel, 80% of the population is surviving on exports of military equipment. Their defense industry is totally based on the fact that there should be more wars for them to supply more arms of different kinds, from drones to missiles to software for different functions of the defense kind, and that is what it is becoming. So the most powerful and the most educated people, the most capable and having scientific knowledge, whom God had preferred over other people because of their worship of God, forgetting God and becoming the worst enemies of themselves first and of mankind later. This is what the words of the Quran says, Inna arazna lamanata ala samawati wal arzi wal jibali فَأَبَيْنَا أَنْ يَحْمِلْنَهَا فَأَشْفَقْنَا مِنْهَا وَهَمَلَهُ الْإِنسَانُ إِنَّهُ كَانَ ظَلُومًا جَعُولًا. The whole idea of the verse is that the amanat which you have will be delivered through knowledge. The trust I have given to you will be delivered by you through knowledge. But knowledge which is under, again, the state of worship. Again under the state of worship. And as your worship will increase, we will add knowledge to you. Your worship will lead you to taqwa. And there are so many verses in the Quran which say that if you do taqwa, we will add to your knowledge. If you do taqwa, we will make you differentiate between good and evil. These are the verses which the Quran says. So, prayer leads to taqwa. Nearly all the verses where prayers are being mentioned, you take Salat, you take Saum, Roza, you take Hajj. Everything goes back to the fact, لَاللَّهُمْ تَتَّقُونَ, so that they may be God-weary, God-conscious. And taqwa becomes the source of livelihood as well as knowledge. The words for livelihood, مَنْ يَتَّقِ اللَّهَ يَجْعَلْ لَهُ مَخْرَجًا وَيَرْزُقُ مِنْ حَيْثُ لَا يَحْتَسِبُ. Those who are conscious of God, are wary of God, we will provide them a path, a way, and give them sustenance from where they have not even imagined, says the Quran. Very obvious. Food, sustenance from one side, and knowledge from the other side. اِتَّقُوا اللَّهِ وَيُؤَلِّمُكُمُ اللَّهِ, says the Quran. Have taqwa of God, and God will educate you. يُؤَلِّمُكُمُ اللَّهِ, and God will educate you. So what has happened? Our sustenance, our shelter. He is assuring us that I have kept it for you, provided you do taqwa. You will get your share. Knowledge, do taqwa, you will get your share. And by these two processes, you will move towards us. And through the moving of yours towards us, you will be spreading the mercy for which we are known to the creation, to the creatures of God. And this creates a different world altogether. If we don't, the verse I've just quoted, innahu kana zaluman jahula, if you don't use your knowledge taken from us and your sustenance taken from us through the process of taqwa, the way we have told you, you will become zalum, you will become jahul. As I told, it's a superlative. Zalim is the positive. Zalum is the superlative. Anybody who is doing great zulm, and jahul again is the superlative of jahil. Great jahil, ignorance. Why has God said this? Why didn't he say zalim? Innahu kana zalimun. Kana zaliman. Jahila. He could have said that. He has not said that. Why he has he used a superlative here? This is the very fact that first, a human being, if he doesn't recognize himself properly, it is the first zulm he has done. That is, he becomes zalim. He has not been able to recognize himself, that he is the representative of God on earth. The verses beginning with that, right? He has accepted the mountains, the earth, and the heavens have not. So once he doesn't recognize his position as a representative of God on earth, that is the first zulm he does on himself. And then he becomes zalum by doing zulm to others. First you will do zulm to yourself, and then the whole thing starts building up. Similarly, you lack the knowledge of yourself, becomes something of making you a jahil. And the next phase, where because of not knowing yourself, you start acting, you act on the basis of ignorance. That initial ignorance and the added ignorance of acting in the world. Once you have not accepted your position and known your position, you still act. So you act on the basis of ignorance. The first ignorance gets added to the next ignorance. So everything starts from you. The good of it and the bad of it. So when we have it, that man arafa nafsahu faqad arafa rabbah, he who knows himself knows God. If you know your position as a servant of God, as someone sent as a khalifa of God, inni ja'ilun fil ardi khalifa, you make it the first base of your knowledge and the first base of your not doing zulm. Once you fall in that category of knowing yourself and not doing zulm as a result, because you have known yourself as someone who is a servant of God, so you look at God for further orders. You are not transgressing his limits. What God says, he transgresses limits. Hudud, what's the word used by the Quran? Is hudud. Had, limit. Hudud, limits. We won't cross the limits of God. Crossing the limits of God is entering the world of sin and sinning. So here we have a situation where we are knowing ourselves and waiting for commands of God, and the commands of God come through two sources. Through the prophets or through the person's own ability to think rationally and act rationally. So aql becomes a mercy of God, and as a result of that, the next phase, the prophets come and strengthen the aql, the rational soul. And this together with like two wings helps us to traverse our life during our stay on this earth. If we do it seriously, if we really apply ourselves to it, then we would be able to create a world of a different kind first within us. Please pay attention to this. First within us and then around us. First within us and then around us. And if we don't, this verse ends at Zaluman Jahula. We become just the opposite. And if then we are raised and questioned about the purpose of our creation, and we say we didn't know. The verses of the Quran move back to Alastu bi Rabbikum, move to the Fitrat ayat. All this comes one after another behind us. And then we would be able to understand what has been undone by us, which had to be completed. And what has been completed by us, which had not to be initiated. We have done things which we shouldn't and undone things which we shouldn't have. Both ways we would be losers for something as ordinary as this world's pleasure. Whereas the soul seeks the pleasure of the Lord. So if the soul is allowed to play its role with the help of the body and the mind, which is the physical world, the mind being different, that it is performing a separate function of retaining ideas, having memory, being able to correlate them and understood by the soul in the form of conclusions. The brain doesn't conclude. It creates linkages. The soul working on the brain concludes. It absorbs information from that. So it's a physical function. When somebody's brain is damaged, either through injury or disease, that is not possible. Memory loss. It's a function of the brain to provide a person with the memories which he has been able to accumulate through his life, through education and otherwise, but it can't yield because it's not working properly. As I told you, either through disease or trauma. These are the facts. So as long as we have the brain, the mind and the body which are capable of performing good, let us put it on the path of prayer and worship and create a world within us which is not based on zulm, which is not based on jahl, based on knowledge and based on doing good, and see how God then takes it forward and makes us agents in creating a new world. And if we are able to come together with a pure mind, and as the Quran says, innamal mu'minuna iqwa, obviously the mu'mineen are nothing but brothers. The coming of brothers makes a lot of difference on the social level by spreading peace in the society and love and affection amongst all human beings. We are never allowed to hate anyone, because the Quran says, repel evil with good. Repel evil with good. In a state of hate, we will not be able to repel evil with good. So hate is proscribed, banned, prohibited by the Quran. So let us follow the path of Rahmanur Rahim. Let us follow the path of Rahmatul Lil Alameen. And let us follow the path of Amirul Mumineen and the Aima, which is again the path of God and the path of the Prophet, and create a world, however small it might be, however small a microcosm it might be, however minuscule it might be, but let us create purity through the sources of purity, both our soul and the guidance given to it through Aql as well as through the book. Wa akhiru da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
Azhar, I have a question.
Rabbi, please go ahead. Go ahead. I can wait. Yeah.
Assalamu alaikum, Maulana.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Now, the ayah that you mentioned of Surah Azraf 72, that stress was presented to heavens and earth and mountains, and they didn't take it, and only man took it. So now my question is, first of all, what is the definition of trust? And secondly, now the only man has the distinction of being an intelligent being. The other mentioned the heavens and the earth, they don't have intelligence. So what does it mean that they refused and man accepted it? So the question is what?
Has the question ended?
No, the question is, what is this trust that that's mentioned in the Quran? And secondly, why is unintelligible beings being referred to that they did not accept the trust? Is it just to show the importance of the trust, or is it a comparison?
Yeah, I did speak about this in detail in the last lecture, where I mentioned that this is a very, very obvious mention, because what we see as having physical strength in the physical terms are obviously very close to us, the mountain, and then the earth, and then the heavens. We see their physical might. And since we see their physical might, and when God says that these physically, again, infinitely stronger things than you are, what you are, have refused it, have not accepted it. It is something in the form of a literal use of a term in which the mountain is being used only as showing a physical reality of a very infinite kind. Heaven similarly, earth similarly. So this is a kind of allegorical mention just to get into the mind that it is not the physical part which is going to be the amana. It is not physical. Had it been physical, these are bigger physical entities, they should be able to do it. So you move out of the physical state. So how did man accept it? The question would be that. I mentioned a bit of it in the last lecture. How did man accept that? The very fact that man has been given a soul. And when we compare it with the other verses, Inni ja'ilun fil ardi khalifa, it is not a question of human choice. And we all feel that we are not here by choice. As God says, I am going to. Or if it's not going also, it's I am placing. Inni ja'ilun means I am placing my vicegerent, my khalifa on earth. And once I have given him of my spirit, you should prostrate before him. That's the command to the angels in the verse Surah Baqarah. So now when we see that, it is obviously the non-physical part of man, and that is the ruh, which we again linked it with the Summa ja'alnahu khalqan akhir ayah, which says, and then we made him a very different being, a different creation. And as a result of that, a different creation, from it is expected a different way of doing things, and that is based on his ability to understand the ghaib and follow the laws of creation. I'll go in greater detail in the next, inshallah, the flow of creation, how it happened. That I'll put it for the next, the flow of creation. You can take it as the, what we call the title of the next lecture, the topic of the next lecture. So, the heavens, the earth and the mountain are being explained. Physical realities, they are not there. You as a physical being will not, obviously, because you are much weaker than that. And therefore, one great thing which you have in you is that your khalqan akhar, as a result of our giving you us of our ruh, wa nafaqtu fihi min ruhi, when I have given him of my spirit. Why it is my is basically giving it a status. Otherwise, God doesn't have a thing which he reduces from himself and gives it to other. No, that is not what we can explain through language. His creation is a process in itself. That I'll try to hint a bit more in the next lecture. But what we know very clearly, and I've spoken again, that amanat is externalizing God's mercy. In the physical world, in the realm of this earth, God has placed Adam in a garden, on earth obviously. And then from there he was sent out of the garden. And then he had to live a life on his own, on the ability of his to think, ponder, understand the ghaib, worship God. And as I told you in the beginning, first and second lectures, it was a natural feeling of human beings to accept God. And as slowly they were surfeit of distractions and reasons to be exploiting others through acquiring wealth, through land, cattle and other things, that kind of a process went forward, and the prophets came at that time to regulate between human beings so that the societies could move towards a higher level of worship and higher level of creativity. But during all these processes, there were millions and millions and billions of people who wouldn't like to follow this or partially follow this. and very few who would like to understand and take of it in the right measure. Those who took it in the right measure became the creative lot. Those who took it in the middle level generally were neutral or became supporters of the tyrants, the taghut which the Quran says. And the worst, the tyrants themselves, were the ones who actually have been a cause of whatever evil has been done in this world as the prime movers of evil. God is not the prime mover of evil. He cannot be, subhanallah. Therefore, not this middle category, because they are themselves being taught how to go against God. So it falls into that category. And the challenge has to be met by the people of God, the prophets and the followers of the prophet. Muhammadur Rasulullah wallazina ma'ahu ashiddaa'u 'alal kuffari ruhamaa'u bainahum. The prophet and those along with him are severe towards those who are oppressors, who are unthankful rot. And ruhamaa'u bainahum, they have rahmat amongst themselves. Why are they opposing the kuffar? Because the kuffar are an ungrateful lot and are not allowing these people to live a life of peace and mercy on this earth. As the Quran says on the verses on jihad, you have been given permission to repel the attacks of those who are attacking you only on the basis that you are saying Rabbun Allah. You are saying my Rabb is Allah. Only on that basis they are attacking you. So we have given you permission to repel. So killing or fighting a war is not an automatic right of any human being in this world. It is a permission given by God only on the basis that they are being persecuted because they are saying the Creator is our sustainer. Allah is our sustainer. So here it is that we come into a different world. So it's externalizing the will of God, and if somebody stops you physically from externalizing it and exploits you and persecutes you, and then it is the permission which God grants. And as the ayat progresses, it says, had it not been for this, synagogues, monasteries, churches and mosques would have been destroyed where the name of God is oft taken. This is the verse of the Quran. So it is externalizing the mercy of God, and those opposing to it being externalized, though they are not being pushed to follow that, depending on the ayat that says La ikraha fid din, there is no compulsion in religion, because there can't be any compulsion in religion, which is an act of soul and the soul needs to work itself up. Nobody can push it to do it. And that's therefore Quran says La ikraha fid din, ho hi nahi sakta. It's not possible to have compulsion in religion. So we can't have compulsion. So it all works together in a complete well-knit manner. But I think I have gone a bit ahead than what I should have. This could come in the 8th or 9th or 10th, inshallah, lectures.
Inshallah, inshallah. One more question, Mujahid. You mentioned that the purpose of the creation of the soul was to worship God. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
And you kind of separated some of the animal characteristics, the filial relationships, the relationship the mother has with the child and so on. But does the definition of worship only include prayer, salat and all those things, or does it also include some of the duties that men have, such as duty towards their parents and so on? What does worship include?
Yeah, worship is the act, as I told you, of the person who is in communion with God, and during that state only the mercy of God flows through him. The very fact that somebody is taking care of his parents, old parents for example, the very reason that he is doing it is the mercy of God which is flowing through him as a human being. Animals also take care of their weak partners. We have seen it and we have a documented history about it. So partly you can give it to the domain of the animal kingdom as well, where the basic idea of supporting a weak animal in the group by the strong group and leaving something for him to eat after doing the hunt, and taking care to see that he is part of the group. We have a study of hunting wild dogs in Africa, where one of them couldn't keep pace with the herd, I mean the group, and they would basically wait for him after going a few kilometers so that he could use his sense of smell and come, and they would never cross that limit from where he could smell them. And after hunting, they would provide something for him. So for 2 years and more, they followed this group, and they found that they were supporting this injured dog who couldn't run along with them. So this you even have in the animal kingdom. But human beings can take it to a different kind of level where it cannot be understood to be just an animal function, but the function of the soul working with God. Where God says, لا تقل لهما أف ولا تنهرهما, don't say أف to them and don't scold them. This is the area of the soul and God. Had it been an animal function, God wouldn't have mentioned it here. An animal can bark at its father, can bite its mother. This is there in the animal kingdom, despite taking care of them to whatever extent possible. But the human being is not supposed to do that. As a human being, he has an elevated state of, and this is worship. And this is worship. Extraordinary care of the child, beyond the animal kingdom. And that is what human beings are given. So this is what we are talking of. It is extends to everything. Looking at a yatim with love. Obviously, it cannot be limited to any one or specific prayer such as such. Obviously, your intention is important and easier. I'll make it much easier. From where it is coming is more important. Whether it is coming from your animal instinct or it's coming from God, that is more important. You know that. As you said, your niyat, that if you put it in a more simpler manner, would be where it is coming from.
Where it is coming from.
Coming, yeah.
One other quick one is, we talked about the soul, obviously, in the last lecture and in this one. There is a verse, I think, in Surah Araf, which says, He it is who created you from a single soul.
Yeah.
What do we understand by, obviously, each one of us has a soul. And does this ayah mean that we are all created from Adam, and Adam had a soul, and our souls are effectively a link from there, his descendants? Is that what it means?
Yeah. This thing which is being mentioned here, we have created you of a single soul. It means that the command of God for the creation of the human being is a single command. And from that we created its mate, says the same ayat as it goes forward. وَخَلَقَ مِنْهَا زَوْجَهَا. Right? Yes. So the command was a single command, and through which the soul was created, and through which its mate was also created. So the singleness is the source from which it has emanated. It is not a multiple source. It also indicates the quality of the soul being a constant in the fact that it is being bestowed with a common kind of ability to worship God. It can be enhanced through the physical capabilities of man of having a much more better brain with which he is able to get more facts and lift himself to a higher level, or he might be having a lesser IQ and therefore he becomes a follower. So these different levels in the physical world are there, but the soul is a single soul. Had the soul been superior and capable of worship, and another soul being incapable of worship, then asking the soul why it is not worshipping the way the soul which is capable of worshipping is doing would be wrong. So what we say, the soul is pure, pristine in all of us. Our ability to understand things is dependent on our IQ and the opportunities we get to understand the world. Maybe the parents were to whom we are born, as we inherited their genes, and the kind of places we are able to gather knowledge from. All this will come to us delivering with the help of the soul to the extent we can possibly deliver. If we deliver less than our abilities, we will be questioned, And if a person with very low abilities and a lower IQ gives a very, very minimal kind of return to God, he will be placed along with the prophets. So the difference is not in the soul, the kind of circumstances, the IQ levels, all this will count, and they make the difference between the souls. Otherwise the souls all are capable at one level of delivering. So no soul can consider itself higher than the soul of the other. Yes, physically and mentally we can be superior, and that is very obvious.
Thank you. One last one before I open it up to some more people here, which is following on from Musa Bhai's question about this amana. Is it because Allah wanted to give His amana, He gave us the power of choice and free will, and the other entities, the heavens, the mountains, and the earth, were quite happy to passively be controlled by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? So what I'm trying to say is that the heavens, the mountains, and the earth were quite happy, endowed with whatever strengths they have, but not have the power of choice, not have free will, just passively do whatever Allah has commanded them to do, and we took it on because, or which came first? Was the amana given to us because we have the power of choice, or power of choice was given to us and free will because we were given the amana?
I will go in detail in the next lecture, the flow of creation, as I mentioned, because I knew that these questions would be asked. The flow of creation would be able to determine how the universe was created, what was the methodology of its creation, was there an entity before the physical creation of the universe. All this we will go in the next phase. To put it summarily, we would only say that if God wants us to worship Him as our own choice, as free human beings, and obviously it doesn't make any sense to give amana to somebody who doesn't have the ability to choose to accept it or not. An agent is an agent because he has choice. You give him something and you say you deliver it there or do this thing with it, and he should be capable of doing it or not doing it. Otherwise there is no question of questioning him at all or even praising him, because there is hardly anything else he can do. If he goes and delivers and comes back and he had no choice, what's the great thing in praising him that you did a great job? He says, what did I do? I didn't. I wanted to throw it away, but there was no choice. So wherever there is choice, only amanat is given there. It's automatically and obviously understandable. Without choice. So you can deduce choice from the amanat or the amanat from the choice. But I would feel in the process of creation, I'll get it more in detail in the next, because I wanted to answer these questions in great detail in our flow of creation lecture, inshallah, in the coming fortnight.
Okay, anybody in the panel, if they've got a question, please raise your hand or unmute yourself and go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum, Azharwai and Mujahid. Ali Yastri. Mujahid, you mentioned, and it's in Quran as well, a man has been created to worship God alone, and obviously there is free will within that. The question I'm trying to put is, in our religion, we say when we become baligh, the wajib becomes, our worship becomes wajib. So what is the timeline when a person has been born until becoming baligh? What is a form of worship? Because the man has been created to worship God. So this transition from being born until becoming baligh, how is that individual performing worship of God to adhere to this ayah? Thank you.
Yeah. When we look at Sharia and the law will always fix certain limits for everything. For the namaz being wajib, for the roza, saum being wajib, for hajj being wajib, all these things would be mentioned in the Sharia. And they will put specific age, specific conditions of the body and mind for it to becoming wajib. This is basically for convenience. This is basically for convenience. The Quran says about John the Baptist, وَآتَيْنَاهُمْ حُكْمَ سَبِيَّا, and we gave him wisdom when he was a child. And he used to pray and worship as a child. The same could be said about a lot of other people, including some of our imams. So the ability to do worship with the right kind of knowledge has been linked to the age of bulugh, of puberty. If puberty is at a less, and funnily, it is at the age of 9 for girls, as if intellectually they have reached that age much before us, maybe around 14, 13, 14 or 15 years. It looks difficult to say that a 9-year-old girl has to perform Psalm and Salat as wajib, whereas a 13 to 14 year old boy would be able to do that as a wajib. I don't think the difference is that much. A 9-year-old boy and a 9-year-old girl don't differ greatly. But we have done this. So it's not puberty also per se, when the Shariat has gone on this. Maybe it is a particular interpretation of the riwayat, because again, this would take me into the field of ijtihad, where there are a lot of riwayat which says the onset of puberty for girls are also necessary for making namaz and roza wajib for them. So this is one area. But one thing is very clear. As you have knowledge, as your IQ and the place where you are born and your educational support which the parents have given to you, and you have been able to understand more than ordinary people, so God doesn't want you to wait till the age of 14 and say that something has become wajib on you. A person might feel that it is wajib on him. So I feel we should more concentrate on making people move towards that point where they will say, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, Ashhadu anna Muhammadar Rasulullah, as shahadatain, and accept imamat in the form of Ali and Waliullah by themselves. And if you accept God, and if you accept the Prophet, and you accept the Imam, you start worshipping God, following the Prophet, and through following the Prophet, following the Imam. We should focus more on that, but puberty as a particular age for achieving that point of being capable of solidly confirming Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, Ashhadu anna Muhammad Rasulullah, and from there on towards Imamat, where the social function of the Prophet starts operating and the Prophet himself becomes an Imam in a particular situation where he's controlling and making laws. So this needs to be understood. Till that time, I think we should be able to teach our children that they should come to that point, and then Salat follows. If we can make them do it earlier, wonderful. And if the boy says, or the girl says, no, I understand, there can be only one God, and he expects worship from me, and I get enriched from worshipping him, so why should we say that he cannot worship God? He can worship God. Making it a wajib or not is not necessary. If that Shari point is to be followed, let us follow it and do a niyat of wajib after the puberty. But before that, it can be done as khurbatan ilallah, and anything done with khurbatan ilallah, which is not wajib, and as a result of the extra effort of that person, gives him more sawab. So he gets more sawab before he reaches the age of puberty if he is performing salat by understanding. So the earlier the understanding, the better. Don't let the child go to the age of 14, for example, for a boy. Or for a girl, similarly, till the age of 12. No. Try to see to it that they get to that much earlier. And I think this world of ours, it has a surfeit of signs of God. And a surfeit of distractions. A million ayah, signs of God, and a million distractions. If we can get our children focused towards the ayah, making them understand the creation, the purpose of the creation of the universe, the purpose of creation of man, and the purpose of his life on earth, then I think the process of wajib becomes only a technical detail which can be followed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mujahid.
Azhar bhai, I have one question.
Go ahead,
Ajaz. Mujahid bhai, my understanding has been first and on the first is on that the God has created us to do the ibadah there. For me, my understanding is ibadat is everything which God, acts of God, if we do it, that's an ibadat there. Going to the mosque is an ibadat. Taking care of your kid is an ibadat. Taking care financially of your kids is an ibadat. And going to a poor family there and giving them any kind of a financial assistance is an ibadat. Calling up the ill person is also an ibadat. And as far as the baligh age is concerned, my understanding has been that if the parents allow the kids and teaches them to pray before he becomes adolescent, 15 years old there, the sawab of that goes to the parents there.
Yeah, see, the sawab of the parent would be something because they have taught the child. There is no doubt about it. But the prayer of the child is his prayer because he is doing it on the basis of understanding God and worshipping him. The sawab for teaching him like that, yes, will come to the parents. But the prayer, yes, it will go to him because he is consciously praying and the basis. He is not just obliging his parents. That's what I am telling. And at times what happens is prayer done as a result of obligation to the parents, slowly when he becomes more powerful and strong and capable of holding his own, gets going. It goes out of the window. That is not what should be happening. And the other part as you said, I totally agree with that. You cannot limit anything flowing as a person's conscious effort after worshipping God and understanding that he is God's servant and performing all his duties of taking care of himself, his family, his near relatives, his distant relatives, his neighbors, and then taking care of other things which are also involved, because only this is not ibadah, it is having a social function as well. And iman in the Quran, I'll go to it as well in the later thing, iman is being totally linked with the social duty of man and human being and just not with his duty within the family and close friends. So this social duty also needs to be properly performed as he grows in his iman. And there are so many verses we can inshallah later on discuss about them. But the question is, ibadat is not limited to any specific ibadat. The core ibadat, salat, saum, hajj, zakat, homes, all have a purpose and all move you closer to God for you to perform at a higher level for the next time and for the next level for which you are aspiring. And this keeps on growing and growing and growing. It's not at any time a dead end. A person keeps going towards God as long as he is alive, up to his deathbed, and that last mile of his, when he sees God, when the soul is totally going away from the body, that smile confirms all that.
Thank you, Mujahid.
Thank you, Ajaz. Irshad has raised his hand. Irshad, would you like to ask your question, please?
Yes. First of all, Assalamu alaikum, Maulana Mujahid. Although you're a lot younger than me, but that's your... Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I'm hearing you.
Yes. You talked about IQ and taqwa. IQ, I mean, some people with low IQ and there are people with high IQ. Is this God-given or is it nurtured or acquired? And if that's the case, if taqwa is related to the IQ, Allah shouldn't expect too much from the person with low IQ than the person with high IQ. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I will not like to limit the taqwa of the person to the IQ per se, but I am saying that with a lesser IQ, if he understands certain basic signs of God and worships with all his heart, with that limited signs which he has in him, he will be raised to that level of the prophets, though he didn't have the knowledge of the prophets. With the limited that he had, for example, I'll give you a very, very simple example. There is a villager who has never seen a car. He has never seen a car. And suddenly a car comes to the village and he sees it's moving. He has a bullock cart, which he knows the bull powers the cart. So now he sees the wheels moving of the car. So he understands that this is something which the person sitting in it is not empowering, because I sit on my bullock cart, but the bullock moves it. The bull moves it. So what he will say is, there is something inside this car, I don't know what, that is moving it. A mechanical engineer would be knowing much more about it. The complete combustion process, how the cylinders, and then how the transmission is taking place. Now the question is, if accepting the car as a reality should be what it is, the fact that this rustic person, this villager, he is accepting it, but he doesn't know the details. And there is the other guy who knows it inside out. You can bring this down to the understanding of the ayats of the Quran and the verses of the Quran, and looking at nature and understanding the thing. He might be able to just see the sunrise and sunset. He might be able to see the spring making the trees green, the flowers and everything. He might take more lessons from that. But a person with a lot of knowledge, with a high IQ, would not be able to consider them as signs of God. So perceive, IQ is something which, if a person uses it in the way the Prophet used his IQ, in the way the Imam used, Hazrat Ali used his IQ, if they used it and reached to that level, and this person incapable of going into that detail, but has with a pure soul and pure intent, with the limited science which he has been able to get into his mind, done the same, then he will be raised at that level. Though his feeling of the same example of the car and its detail is not like that of an engineer. He can see the cylinders moving, he can imagine them, he can look at, understand the transmission happening. No, he is not able to do that. But he is happy to understand that there is something moving because it has the power to move. And there is no bullock in the cess, so it is not an animal moving it. So this is what I am saying. Never with taqwa be limited to IQ, because with very high IQ, people are not even recognizing God. Leave alone having taqwa. And people with much less IQ, with little science, but genuinely, again I will mention that three line case, just because three lines have been drawn within your experience a short while ago, which are 6 feet long, 1 feet between them exactly, you can be sure that it's an act of an intelligent person who understands measurement, and that 6 feet who understands measurement and parallelism, then put three parallel lines. The only problem, we are us not accepting the atom as created through intelligence, the whole universe created through intelligence, is because it has not happened before us, and it couldn't happen before us because we are the result. And I will go again into the next lecture on that basis, flow of creation. We have come at the end. We have the ability to go back and see the beginning. How we see it, how we should be able to see it, that is the topic. That is the topic of the next one.
Jazakallah, Mujahid. Thank you from me.
Thank you. Musa bhai has raised his hand as well. So, Musa bhai, aapka question, please.
Yeah, my question was, when we say any intention that we do for any worship, we say Qurbatan ilallah. So is that khurbat, because Allah is not a physical entity, obviously. So I know, I'm sure this has been answered by your previous lecture, but I just want to clarify this. When we say khurbatan ilallah, that means we are trying to achieve closeness to God. And what is this closeness mean, qurbat? And is it emulating his attributes, cultivating his attributes among in ourselves? And what are the attributes that we are capable of cultivating? And also, is there a hierarchy of cultivating those attributes?
Yeah, the last part first. Yes, there is a hierarchy for those attributes. There is no doubt about it. Hurbatan ilallah means your soul seeking its actual place by making an effort to find it. The soul, when it says hurbatan ilallah, means that it is not at the best place where it should be. This is very easily understandable. This is how we deduce things. Simple logic. If you are moving something, that means it's not at the right place. It can be moved to a higher level. So from there flows the hierarchy of it. Right? Movement means something is less, it can move to a higher level. And then again to a higher level. The hierarchy follows. So the soul feels that it needs to get to a different level. It's not close enough at this point of time. It's like the thirst in the body. When you are thirsty or hungry, you take water or eat food and are satiated. But again you will feel hungry. Again you require food and water. The soul again is like that. It goes towards God. It's not in a position where it says, I am sufficiently close to God. It could be very close to God from our point of view. Just take the view of the Imams or the Prophets. At a very, very high level. But the higher the level, the greater the thirst. The lower the level, the lesser the thirst. And at the close to zero, hardly any thirst. So once the guru starts living its natural life, feeling itself independent of the body and independently created and the essence of me, it uses the mind and the body as an instrument for it getting more closer and closer to God through different acts of worship, through prayer, salat, through saum, through zakat, through hajj, through jihad and through other all things. So what we are speaking of is the soul is a perennially thirsty thing and continually moving towards God, and that is how it has been designed. And if it understands the purpose, it goes on the right path and continually is fired by God to come closer and closer and closer. We will get into this in greater detail, how the soul moves and how the soul needs to be directed towards God, keeping in mind that very famous word, Ya ayyuhal insanu innaka kadihun ila rabbika kadham fa mulaqi. Oh man, you are moving strenuously towards God, your God, and surely you will meet Him. So how does this motion, which is predestined for all of us, how this phase has to be traversed, that is what we need to know. And I think it requires a complete two or three lectures. How the soul needs to traverse this thing which is predestined, as the verse of the Quran says, innaka kadihun, you are strenuously striving towards, coming towards us. And if it's in a state of hurbat, one after another and one after another, that hurbat would be a very, very different thing. And but the one thing is important, the soul needs to know itself at least the basic level as an independent entity. It's not the mind, it's not the body, it's an independent entity. So the process of hurbat accelerates.
Thank you, Mujahid. That was excellent, and we look forward to your talks on moving the soul, because I think that would be a very useful thing for all of us. So the last thing, I've got Brother Sajjad Naqvi from Pakistan. He would like to either ask a question or make a comment. Sajjad Bhai, go ahead, please.
Yeah, assalamu alaikum, everybody. Thank you very much. I'm Dr. Sajjad Naqvi from Pakistan. I'm a psychiatrist and I'm in this group by the courtesy of my respected other brother. So it will be just a short, I will try to cut it short because it's already quite a long time. It is just revising your previous lesson, your previous lecture. And I'm thankful that Agha Sahib is carrying away all the topic in a very fluent manner. He's taking it ahead. Thank you very much for that. I just want to make a comment about Adan. Like, you know, it's already when we say Tawheed and we accepted that Allah is one, He is Wahid. In when we believe in Allah, naturally we believe in all His properties, all His sifat, whether these are sifate sabutiya or these are sifate salfiya. But we believe in all that. But why Adan? To me, I think it is very important. One thing is understanding God, because we are living in the universe which is created by Allah, and we are living in it, and it is, you know, it is being reared, or it is being, you know, carried away by the God, carried by the God, or controlled by the God through some phenomena. And one thing, one of the basic principles of the nature is that it is a balance between diversities. Whether it is warm or cold, it is day or night, it is mountain or it is plains, it is sea or desert. So life is, it is a group of diversities, and these diversities are there. One thing to make sure that we believe in God, that it is someone who created this. And then there are certain diversities which are actually a test for us, like poor and rich. Now, why God created poor and rich? He could have made everybody rich. He could have, you know, just abolished anybody poor. But creating a diversity between poor and rich is a test for us. And we are continuously exposed to a lot of tests and a lot of conflicts in our life. And if we believe in other, that the whole of the nature is based on Qaim bil Qist, indeed Allah and His angels, they are witness to it, that whole of the nature is balanced. When we believe on balance and equilibrium, and as Agha Sahib has said, that as a vice-regent of God, vice-regent of Allah, we have to continue, we have to take it forward, take this balance and equilibrium forward in our lives, in ourselves, and in around us. We have to carry this balance and equilibrium. And just, you know, by my little knowledge of psychology or a psychiatry, just adding that Agha Sahib, he mentioned that there is an animal part in us and there is a soul which represents the God part in us, or God's order or God's obedience, whatever it is. You know, when we see from it the knowledge of psychology, and we see the explanation of famous psychologists, Freud is known as father of modern psychology or psychiatry. And the way how he describes the self is, the soul is, that man, human being is, that we have three things. One thing is id. It denotes the basic desires of hunger, of pleasure, or sex. The basic desire, that is the animal part. And if according to Quran, it is nafse ammara. Of course, this nafse ammara, if we just obey it, it takes us to sin, to sinful life. Then comes, he said, then there is ego. Ego is, what is me, myself, the human being? That how, you know, how now I have these desires and how I have to fulfill. And then there is superego. That superego is the norms, values, culture, and above all the religion, above all the Allah's commands about how you have to fulfill your basic need. Now this ego, which is nafse lawama, this creates a balance. The duty of this nafse lawama of ego of me is to create a balance between it and superego. Now I have to fulfill, I need to fulfill my basic desires according to the commands of superego. Then I'll be in pleasure, because it's a very beautiful thing that whatever the desires of body and the desires of soul are opposite. Body feels good when you eat more. Soul feels good when you eat less. Body feels good when you're in absolute pleasure, and soul feels when you disarray from pleasure, or you refuse pleasure. Like, you know, eating is pleasure, but, you know, fasting, do our soul, we are hungry, but soul feels pleasure. So now ego wants that we should
superego wants that we should fulfill our desires in a way as they are given, as they are, you are guided to the righteous path. The right thing to hear, the right thing to eat, the right thing to see, the right thing to eat, the right thing to talk. So this is what. Now this ego is nafsi lawama, and once you totally, you are subdued, your id is totally subdued towards superego, then that is the phase where you reach the state of nafsi mutmainna. When you are totally, absolutely, you are accepting the commands of Allah, your life is yashri nafsa ibtiqa marzatillah. When you are totally subdued, your nafs, yourself is totally subdued, your id is totally subdued towards the commands of Allah. And that is, you know, the basic, you know, I as a psychiatrist, I'm a practicing psychiatrist for the last 32 years. And what I have all gathered is that the all the anxiety and the depression, it is created, the basic root is that we are facing a conflict between the desire and between the reality. It's all the conflict. The more is the conflict, when we, as Maula Ali Hazrat Ali Aslam said, that it is the duty of the human being to analyze his desires, whether you should have this desire or not. So when we just, we can only resolve this conflict that we see that whether this desire, as Agha Sahib has mentioned, whether this desire is coming out of our animal part or God, or soul, or God part. So that is the thing. So I think basically, other is very important to understand Tawheed or understand Allah, but it is very important to, you know, to spend your life, which will ultimately take you to absolute pleasure. And in so many religions, the same, you know, ultimate aim of every person is, it is, you know, immortal pleasure. And in, if we, you go through the teachings of Buddha, he would say it is Nibbana. When you absolutely deny the animal part, you reach into extreme pleasure, and that extreme pleasure, they say in their terminology, it is Nibbana. So that is, personally feel, because it is a day-to-day, you know, understanding and talking to the patients, that this is the basic thing, which is the beauty in our Asul-e-Deen, which unfortunately is not so emphasized in the, Asul-e-Deen of our brothers from different sects of Islam or from different schools of Islam. And thank inshallah, you, it's a great pleasure to be here in this group and listening to so literally talk of Agha Sahib. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Sajjad Bhai. Thank you for your input.
No. Not a problem. Thank you for the input which Rakh Sahib has given. And it's always a pleasure. We can discuss Freud as he has done. And we can get into more detail, the differences between Freud and Jung. And then the other aspects of the ego and all that. We can go into that. And I suppose some of the facts that he has mentioned seem to be looking in correspondence with what we discuss most of the time. But there are certain things about Freud which we would be able to just not accept. We'll have to put it aside, because he starts the whole thing from the desire part as the original. We go on the other side. We say this is incidental to being free and having a choice. The soul is given choice, so therefore it's given desire. It doesn't start from the desire. So this we will put to the next thing. But what is being spoke about, other the way you have interpreted it, I am in consonance with it. If you mean to say what the balance God has created, right, that would mean, but in theology that didn't mean that. What you've mentioned here, the adl which we said, didn't mean that in theology. It meant something different. But what you say of adl now, that God maintains a balance and he wants us to maintain a balance. From the verses of the Quran, he says, we have given you the mizan. That is for maintaining the balance. What balance I have maintained? I have maintained. And now that your duty is there, that you continue to maintain the balance in the society on earth. That's 100% acceptable. I mean, there's no problem in accepting that at all. But that is not what was initially meant by adl, by the theologists. They meant something different from the mizan. So what you have explained, I have no issues with the adl aspect of it, the interpretation which you have given. No, there is no problem at all. Obviously, God is not a zalim. He has maintained everything in things, and therefore he has given us the mizan for us to maintain that adl and that balance. Acceptable. No issues at all in that. The Freud part, yes, we can discuss it. You as a psychiatrist would be able to give us a lot more insight into it than I as a basic student of psychology.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Agha Mujahid. Sorry, it's run a little bit over time, and we look forward to the next one, which will be on the 23rd of January, I think, adding 14 days, on the flow of creation. Is that the main thrust, main topic?
Yeah, yeah, I will try to talk on that.
Flow of creation. So, again, we pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala enhances your knowledge, keeps you healthy, and enables us to share in your wide and extensive knowledge, inshallah. And on behalf of all the other participants, I'd like to thank you, and jazakallah, and we'll, inshallah, meet up again in a couple of weeks' time. Thank you, so. Thank you, everybody. Thanks so much.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you.